Welcome back to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And on this week's segment, it's all about our top 10 list, sort of aspirational list for 2015 of where we want to be in the world to eat dish X,
mm-hmm.
or where we want to be drinking this year coming up, what we want to be cooking this year coming up. Please email us at foremanwolf@wypr.org and give us your thoughts. We'd love to hear what your thoughts are on those categories. And you're welcome to react to any of our ridiculous thoughts in those categories. So that's it. We tend to get excited about this stuff.
We do. So what are some of the value wines that you know, because I could just name off my list of Chateauneuf du Pape that I want to drink, and it's all high end. So let's talk about some things that are good values.
I would love to drink high end Chateauneuf du Pape at a very inexpensive price.
That would be neat.
So how do you get that done, right? That's the trick is... One of the things that I do at home that we have a practice of, we have these big old wash sinks and keep things that are for any time consumption, not expensive. And the aesthetic is that they're probably retail $20, $25 and down in that sink. So it really doesn't give it to anyone for any occasion. You open it for any purpose, whatever it is. So things that maybe hit that category and down for any time consumption. I would say this is going to sound... See, here's the thing. We were talking about champagne, and people, they cling to names that they know because they don't want to feel dumb. I know I'm dumb. I know I'm not going to... I don't know everything, and I have plenty to learn about wine. So I want to try things. I mean, that's kind of like... I already know I'm going to fall down. I'm just going to get up until I try things that I want.
Mm-hmm.
The wine that you probably haven't heard of too much that is really similar to Chateauneuf du Pape or can be, or some of the Côte du Rhône wines that are made from Grenache, is a grape that goes by the name Cannonau. Cannon, just Cannonau. Cannonau. Or I probably misspelled that, but Cannonau, it's from Sardinia, okay? And in Sardinia, the conditions are really not gigantically dissimilar. It's another Mediterranean wine. It's a grape really from Spain and Sardinia that went to France, that the Phoenicians brought originally from Mesopotamia. So it's one of these ancient Mediterranean grapes. It's well adapted to there. And it has that same sort of kirshy, dried herb, big-bodied, almost kind of beefy but not tannic sort of character to it when it's at its best. And you can find not expensive Cannonau for $20 and less. The great producer to look for, Pala, P-A-L-A, does great work.
And these are Côte du Rhône's?
These are not. These are from the island of Sardinia.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Okay. And literally, I think that the best Cannonau, dollar for dollar, almost always better than Côte du Rhône Village or Côte du Rhône. Why? Because no one's heard of it.
Okay. Got it.
And they're not comfortable with it, so there's not that much market penetration. They're just coming to the market. Winemaking is some years behind for the most part, but there are a few... Having been there recently, there are a few really committed small producers that are superb, but I would look for that grape from that place in particular if it's Chateauneuf that you're trying to replicate the idea of. What else is on your list of serious French wine that you don't want to spend as much as that really cost, but want to drink something that good?
Well, Clos du Pape is, I mean,
so another great Chateauneuf du Pape.
One of my favorites.
If you want to drink something that's a little more. That will be a little bit more, and I know it's not coming to the U.S. right now, but it will be because I'm trying to get this stuff brought to the U.S., is a producer named Dettori, D-E-T-T-O-R-I, who's really one of the maybe most gifted 10, 15 winemakers I've ever had the privilege to visit the cellar of and study the work of, and his stuff is amazing.
Dettori, okay. But
if it's you wish you could be drinking first-class Bordeaux, the problem with Bordeaux or with Napa Cabernet Sauvignon is you're in the real estate business. So Napa real estate's expensive.
Sure.
Bordeaux real estate's expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Those are wines that, you know, you have to pay for the place, not just the quality of what's being done. The question is not, and you already know about those places. If you already know about those places, it's very popular, you're pretty likely to be overpaying for the quality of what's in the bottle. You may not be able to duplicate it anywhere else in the world, but sometimes you can, sometimes you can't. I think Washington State can be a great value. Chile can absolutely be a great value for Cabernet Sauvignon. There's one producer in Friuli, in the northeast of Italy, called Moschioni, who does gigantic red wines with those grapes, along with native grapes,
mm-hmm.
That can be just the basic red from him is Cabernet Sauvignon and Merlot and a little bit of two native grapes, Cupertino and Pinolo. And that is a very good purchase for a gigantic red wine that isn't $60 or $80 or $150 or something on a retail shelf. That's impressive work.
I wish that there was a way to taste more of Henri Bonneau's wines. I don't think they're that available,
no,
right?
No, it's the devil to find those things.
Mm-hmm.
He makes magical stuff. That fellow Dottori, I would say that Bonneau is one of the real wizards that I've had a chance to visit and taste the wines of over the years. I would put Dottori at that sort of wizard level.
All right. I like wizards.
I mean, I can think of, like I said, maybe 10 that I've ever had a chance to visit with over the years, and he's there.
Any other wines, not necessarily value-oriented, that you want to drink this coming year?
I do want to drink value-oriented wines. So it's funny. I want to explore more and more the serious red wines of Chile. I'm very impressed with Carmenere and the quality as it's come along. Chile, some of the smaller growers are finally kind of breaking out of the gigantic houses that have dominated that business and making wines of individual character, although some of the gigantic houses have made great wines and some of the single vineyard sites. I think that's super interesting stuff that's coming on. I think the south of Italy, and Puglia in particular, has a ton of potential in wines that you want to drink for any purpose, for burgers, for pizza, for, you know, a steak on the grill, just to like be a happy person with a great big fat glass of red wine that's like spicy and juicy and loaded with flavor and, you know, and is not a giant ticket from grapes like Primitivo and Negromaro. So Cindy, you asking me about wines that I want to drink in 15, what beverage or what wines besides things like Clos de Pape, which are fantastic, what else do you want to drink? I know you love champagne. I know you love Chateauneuf du Pape. What have you not had, or what do you want to explore that's coming up? Is there the whole world is raging on about cocktails and things like that. Is there something in that range that's interesting to you?
I just recently bought a book called, it's a strange name, it's called Death and Company, but it's about this new bar in New York City.
You're excited about that.
Yeah, and I just think it's absolutely amazing. This guy's had an interest in making cocktails since he was a kid and ended up, you know, managing to get this real estate space in New York City and pulled together a bunch of bartenders that are pretty much the best at what they did and do in New York City. And they make these drinks from, you know, every, like, millions of ingredients, fresh this, fresh that, squeeze this, you know, all this just amazing product, whether it's herbs or juices or whatever. And I think that's really pretty amazing. And it is a huge change in the cocktail industry in our country. And it's been going on for a number of years now. But, you know, I think that that's pretty exciting. And it'd be fun to learn more about and to sort of experience. Like, I'd like to go to that bar and see what it's like. It also seems like a pretty fun place to go, so.
Sounds like a pretty uplifting place.
Yeah, I don't know what the deal is with it.
Yeah, no, I'm just being a smart aleck.
Pretty controversial. Oh, there's some controversy about that bar, I think, a little bit.
I would expect that. I think it's interesting with spirits over the years, and there's a lot of interest in spirit, in cocktails, but really in spirits too, whether it's American whiskeys or malt whiskeys. I have no end of interest in, after a meal, in cognac and Armagnac, because there is something related to a pastry. There's something akin to pastry in the way those spirits mature.
Mm-hmm.
And having had a lot of really older cognacs and older Armagnacs, that the complexity levels and still that note of sort of like angel sweetness, that even with no sugar, you know, but the thought that it conjures,
oh,
is pretty bewitching.
The perfume is just so beautiful of something like that, and it is does make you sort of settles you down after a big meal too.
Yeah, no question. If nothing else, keeps your brain going as well as your digestion. So, now our last top 10 list was the places you want to eat, like the specific restaurants you want to eat. And mm-hmm. I know you get super excited about this.
I do,
because.
And we kind of tie that into those places you want to go to, so
well,
hand in hand.
There's no question. So what is your list of places that you want to eat?
Well, since I want to go to the British Isles, I really want to eat at Michel Roux's restaurant. It's called the Waterside Inn. It's near Windsor, and I just admire him so much as a chef, and I just watched a YouTube video.
You love his books.
I love his books. His books are fantastic. And he has a book called Eggs and a book called Pastry. And actually, I think I just noticed on his website where I was watching the YouTube video that he's got has a new book coming out. So I'm going to absolutely have to get that. But he talks on in this video, he talks about how the restaurant started. And he's just a wonderful man. I would love to work in his kitchen and be able to cook, you know, with him and learn from him, do a little stage there. But I'd like to eat his food. So I have great respect for him as a chef. And I really, really want to get back to Conroca. You know, he is considered one of the best chefs in the world now. And when you and I ate there the first time, it was quite some time ago. And
his cooking was as good or better the first time than it was since then for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he was still. I do want to get back and see what he's doing. Also,
I really want to see what he's doing, and that's in Girona, Spain. So Conroca, one of the better chefs, he's considered one of the top 10 chefs in the country now, in the world now. Excuse me.
It's about an hour's drive north of Barcelona.
That wasn't on my list, but I would love to go back to Barcelona. Talk about markets. The Boqueria there is just one of the most amazing markets I've ever seen. And I love Barcelona. It's an amazing city. And to also be able to go to the seacoast and eat the seafood there.
It's one of the cool feelings in that city is to stand in the middle of a wide street and see the Mediterranean on one end of the street and then flip your head around and see the mountains on the other end of the street.
It's just amazing. It's a lovely, lovely
marvelous
place.
In
La Guillole, France is Bras Restaurant. And I wish I could have eaten his father's food because that is more my style of cooking and my interest. And it's more, he was doing, obviously an older gentleman was doing more classic French cooking. I think his son is probably doing more molecular or avant-garde cooking, but I would still like to go there, experience the food and see what he is doing.
Sometimes with these famous restaurants that have a generational change, you have that. And it happens with winemakers sometimes too, where the one generation has to have a little revolution or a little rebellion from the prior,
it's understandable.
Sometimes it's an upset that that is not too fun.
Well, so I would love to try his food. I would like to get back to three restaurants that I love. I would like to go back to Paul Bocuse while Chef is still cooking or still, you know, in his restaurant.
Amazing to see him there in attendance, for sure.
Yeah, I really would like to. And I would like to eat some of the other items on his menu. You know, you can only eat so much when you're there. And I would really, of course, like to go back to Michel Carrard, especially now that I've eaten at his farm restaurant. That was one of the greatest experiences of my life, basically, this past year eating there. So I would like to get back and again, go through the rest of the menu and really experience some of the best food in the world, at least in my experience. And I'd like to go back to Georges Blanc. Again, some of these chefs are getting older, and I would like to continue to have the opportunity to try their food. It's been several years now since I've eaten there once, and I would like to go back and eat his food again. And I believe, you know, he has family in the restaurant too, so I'd like to see what changes are occurring, you know, with that cooking.
It'll be interesting in France in particular to see the big generation that is now sort of hitting retirement in chefs and restaurateurs. It'd be interesting to see what happens more with the next one. How many carry on relatively traditionally? How many try to blow it up and do something more molecular? How many try to blow it up and do something more global?
Mm-hmm.
And how it will be, I don't know that we'll see as concise a movement in one culture again, and culinarily, as we saw in France through the 60s, 70s, 80s.
I agree.
And while it's sort of been around the last 25 years, I think France has been waiting for what that next thing is going to be. There have been fits and starts, and there are people doing excellent work in different places, but there's not been one movement where it seemed like 10 people looked around, realized everybody else wanted to do the same thing, and they all just pushed forward at the same time.
It's not going to happen again, but it will be interesting to see how French food moves forward. As you say, you do have some, you know, this whole generation of amazing great chefs that really changed French food, as you say, in the 50s, 60s. And it will be interesting to see what happens with this new generation. And, you know, you kind of went through an Asian influence. You went through, a molecular Spanish influence on cooking in France and some other influences. And
they've been trying to find a path.
I feel like they're starting to come back to their own influences, you know, their own regional products, their own culinary history, and, you know, which of course really was effective, you know, was really influenced by Italy in what, the 1700s. So
I mean, that's
interesting.
Regionality is the thing. It's funny. I know that people don't think it and the French never think it, but I always think of French cooking as, of course, it's informed by Italian cooking because that's an older culture. And the step that the Italians have taken over the last, you know, 15, 20 years is to become enormously more regional than there was never one cooking. You know, there are 26 regions and Italy speaks 8 languages. I mean, that's that to me, that super regionality and really digging into the tradition of one particular area, that boring down into these are the 3 pasta shapes we make and this
is
why
great.
And this is the story. You know,
that's so great.
And
celebrating your region.
And it's kind of, it's not rejecting that the rest of the world exists, but it's embracing that there's something uniquely available here.
Yes.
And that the slow food movement that really kind of was the origin of that, and slowing down and noticing, you know, it's a stop and smell the roses kind of approach to cooking. And I have a feeling that France, when that happens in the next couple of years, I think as they do that more and more and it becomes more regional and a little more simple, I think it's going to be fantastic what happens.
I hope that is what happens.
Because there's so many amazing products available.
Absolutely. Their farming is phenomenal. So very good.
What is the number one thing, food and wine-wise, you look forward to in 2015? What do you think? Besides black truffles.
I was just
going
to say, immediately truffles come to mind. I can't help myself. I'm thinking, why don't I have truffles right now? I'm sure they're available.
When they come, all I want is to fry really good baguette,
like the old baguette
in butter,
exactly,
in a heavy pan. And while they're warm, slice a nice fat piece of black truffle on it.
Yeah, a little salt.
Have a little glass of pot roger and toast in the new year.
There you go. That's perfect. Perfect.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, we're on the same page with that.
Well, thanks for listening to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we wish you a happy new year.
Absolutely. Happy new year to everybody. May it be a good one.